Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Radio Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice. Today we'll tell you about a town hall held by Congresswoman Sarah Jacobs, and what's unusual about it is it was held in Darrell Issa's district. On Crime Beat, hear about a SWAT standoff in Santee that ended in a fatal shooting, and a sexual assault in Rancho San Diego where the suspect is wanted by the sheriff. From CalMatters, we'll have a report on cuts in adult education services for immigrants. The County of San Diego is asking for help to clear the animal shelters during August. August also brings closures of several county parks due to high heat, and we'll have details. From National Public News Service's Yonder Report, hear why some tribes are suing the Environmental Protection Agency, why there are some gaps for Medicaid in rural areas, and more. On Jobs Talk, we'll tell you about a big grant the county just got to help fight wage theft. And on Green Scene, learn about cuts to the EPA and how those are impacting California's clean air, water, and more. On Destination East County, we'll tell you about all the most fun festivals and events coming up across our inland region. And then on 2025 Talks, hear about that controversial Texas redistricting and what it could mean for the balance of power in Congress, the controversy over Trump firing the head of labor statistics, and why a new report says ICE mass arrests are a solution without a problem, because the vast majority of those being rounded up have never committed any crime. And finally, hear about Santee City Council taking the high road, approving 4 cannabis dispensary permits. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. Jeers and laughter filled the halls of the California Center for the Arts on July 27th as a man in a rubber chicken mask imitated Congressman Darrell Issa before a crowd of hundreds of his constituents. According to organizers, the stunt sought to highlight Issa's alleged fear of facing dissatisfied voters, marking the second empty chair town hall hosted in California's 48th congressional district since March. But this time, Democratic Congresswoman Sarah Jacobs from a neighboring district took a seat beside the bird-faced effigy of her absent Republican colleague. Issa, whose 48th district includes vast tracts of East County, as well as North County, San Diego, the Mountain Empire, and Riverside County, has not held a town hall since 2017, opting instead to host extravagant fundraisers outside his district. The event in Escondido was organized by Indivisible North County, the local chapter of a national nonprofit whose stated mission is to defeat the right-wing takeover of American government and build an inclusive democracy. Jacobs opened her remarks by slamming the budget bill, which President Trump calls the One Big Beautiful Bill Act. The bill, which he signed, slashes Medicaid funding while earmarking more than $170 billion in additional funds for immigration enforcement. Congresswoman Jacobs said approximately 1 in 4 San Diegans rely on Medicaid for health care, noting that rural areas like the 48th District will be especially impacted by cuts. When asked how everyday citizens can make an impact, Jacobs discouraged constituents from copying and pasting those masked emails to their representatives, a strategy she says is ineffective. Instead, she encourages audience members to focus on building unity by welcoming disillusioned Trump voters who may now feel that they've been misled. As for those who did not vote for Trump, she urges them to avoid the temptation to say, "I told you so." She notes that studies have found that arguing with people merely hardens their position, adding, "Actually talking to your friends and neighbors, that's how we break through the noise." The conversation quickly shifted to election integrity and the 2026 congressional midterms. Jacobs accused Republican leadership of openly cheating, referring to Texas Governor Greg Abbott's plan to redraw congressional districts in his state. Critics characterized the move as gerrymandering, claiming it will award Republicans a disproportionate number of House seats compared to their population, and Texas Democrats are protesting by refusing to show up for a vote in order to try to block the measure. Should the plan be enacted, California Governor Gavin Newsom has threatened to carry out reciprocal strategic redistricting via ballot initiative here. At one point, the town hall was almost derailed by demonstrators shouting Palestine. It was a rare moment of hostility from an otherwise supportive crowd. The event moderator responded by assuring the audience that questions about Palestine would be addressed later. Jacob's mixed voting record on Israel's ongoing military occupation of Palestine, which Amnesty International has characterized as a genocide, has drawn criticism from both sides of the aisle. In April 2024, an op-ed for San Diego Jewish World criticized Jacobs, who is Jewish, for some stands against Israel. That same month, the left-wing group Track AIPAC accused the Democratic congresswoman of abetting a genocide by voting for an Israeli military aid package. At the town hall meeting, Jacobs condemned hate crimes against the Jewish community and urged voters to distinguish anti-Semitism from what she calls legitimate criticism of the policies of the State of Israel. She tried to assuage demonstrators' concerns by noting that she recently introduced the Block the Bombs Act, which would cease offensive military aid to Israel, while, quote, horrible things in Gaza are ongoing. Audience members erupted into chaos for a few minutes, with one faction demanding more committed answers and the other shouting at protesters to shut up. One voice shouted, "Is it a genocide, Congresswoman?" Jacobs dodged that question, responding, "Genocide is a technical legal determination." The congresswoman regained control of the room with more unifying talking points, condemning the new budget for ICE to broaden immigration enforcement, denouncing tax cuts for billionaires, and advocating for nonviolent resistance. Jacobs spoke of the toll that ICE raids have had on the community, such as a chilling effect on educational participation and crime reporting. She said, "We are already seeing a drop in school enrollment," adding, "We're already seeing less crimes being reported because people are worried that if they report a crime, they might be investigated for their immigration status. That doesn't make any of us safer." Jacobs disclosed that she exercised congressional oversight by visiting immigrant detention centers in Guantanamo Bay and Otay Mesa. She shared, "Look, I'm not naive. I know when I show up, they have cleaned up the whole thing, but just being able to show up and ask those questions helps situations." She went on to say that detainees had not been allowed to fill out legal forms requesting congressional assistance, so the congresswoman hand-delivered the paperwork and waited while they were signed. She asked the audience, "When you hear stories about what's happening in those detention centers, please share it with me." Jacobs ended her remarks by reiterating her call to action: have candid conversations with your Republican loved ones. As she stood to exit, the audience broke into a chant, repeatedly shouting, "Tax the rich!" Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests. We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. Please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
This is John Tidwell with a Crime Beat report. Sheriff's deputies shot and killed a suspect who fired at deputies and struck an armored vehicle following a SWAT standoff in Santee on July 27th. The suspect has been identified as 55-year-old Michael Redding. Deputies responded shortly before noon to a call reporting an assault with a firearm and criminal threats against the suspect's sister and her husband at their home on Willow Grove Road. The sister and her husband fled the scene, but Redding barricaded himself inside. The sheriff's SWAT team and crisis negotiators were called in, but Redding refused to come out. After several hours, a shot was heard from inside the home. Deputies used a drone to assure that Redding did not need medical help, but then deployed chemical agents. More than 7 hours after the standoff began, Redding emerged and fired shots at deputies, striking the armored vehicle parked outside. Three deputies fired shots and struck Redding, who was declared dead at the scene, says Lieutenant Arturo Swadner with the San Diego Police Department, which is investigating the officer-involved shootings. The deputies who fired at Redding are Luke Varize, Kevin McCauley, and Parker Robbins. Varise has served with the Sheriff's Department for 13 years, while McCauley and Robbins have served for 9 years and 3 years, respectively. All officers wore body-worn cameras, and SDPD confirms that the cameras were in operation during the incident.
The Sheriff's Department seeks public help to identify and find a man wanted for sexual battery of a female jogger, age 24, in the 1600 block of Hilton Head Road in the Rancho San Diego community of unincorporated El Cajon. The woman went for an evening jog on July 30th. After 8:30 p.m., the suspect grabbed her from behind by putting his left arm around her neck and chest to restrain her and then sexually battered the woman, according to Lieutenant Aloha Peters. On social media, the victim has posted that she was groped. She screamed and was able to run away, per Lieutenant Peters and the victim. The suspect fled in the opposite direction. He is described as a white male in his mid-20s, about 5'6" tall, 150 pounds, with a thin build, and wearing a dark-colored top, a dark, possibly black hat, and black flip-flops. He had short, shaggy, medium brown hair. Detectives are actively investigating this incident, and anyone with information is asked to call the Sexual Assault Unit at 858-285-6112 or the After Hours line at 858-868-3200. You can also remain anonymous and call in a tip to Crime Stoppers at 888-580-8477. Reporting from Rancho San Diego for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from San Diego's East County.
This is John Tidwell with an education report from Cal Matters. As President Donald Trump ramps up immigration enforcement, targeting immigrants at workplaces and street corners across California, now his administration is turning its attention to adult students. In a July memo, the U.S. Department of Education said that adult students without legal status must be banned from federally funded career technical education classes, English language programs, and high school equivalency courses. Adult schools offer these courses to anyone over 18 years old, including immigrants, and many school leaders say the new policy could lead to enrollment declines. California's K-12 districts may also need to adapt, since they use federal funding to offer many career technical education classes that teach skills such as welding and farming. The new policy poses administrative challenges for these schools, which don't require students to prove their legal status. Many students, including U.S. citizens, lack the proper verification documents. Randy Tillery, the Director of Economic Mobility for the nonprofit WestEd, which helps collect data on behalf of the state, says the policy is going to perpetuate this atmosphere of fear. California Attorney General Rob Bonta says the state is suing over the new policy. The U.S. Education Department refuses to comment on the new policy. In a press release, the department said it will start enforcing the policy on August 9th. Adult schools ask students to voluntarily share their Social Security numbers, which are only available for those with a legal right to work in the U.S. Of the more than 500,000 adult learners taking classes in California, about 10% voluntarily share their numbers with their schools, Tillery said. Schools across the state say that they are waiting for more guidance from state and federal agencies before barring students from any classes. V, a student at Huntington Beach Adult School, has been taking a beginner-level English language class in person for the past 2 years. V agreed to be interviewed on the condition that CalMatters not identify her because she doesn't have legal status and fears deportation. Her three children, who are U.S. citizens, couldn't stand the idea of their mom going to school this summer as the threat of immigration raids loomed. She told CalMatters in Spanish, her voice shaky and close to tears, "When I grabbed my backpack to go to school, my kids said, 'Don't go, Mom. What if you don't return?'" Last month, she sent a note to her teachers saying that because of uncontrollable anxiety, she needed to take the class online. She says she is terrified to leave her house. Normally, her class has about 40 students, but this summer, it's down to 24, according to her teacher. The class is live-streamed, and an increasing number of students are opting to take the course online, according to the teacher. V found it harder to focus while taking classes online due to distractions from her kids and other factors. So after about 2 weeks of online school, V returned to class in person, despite her kids' fears. Steve Curiel, the principal, said the school is allowing students without legal status to attend, at least for now, until the education department provides more guidance about its new policy. For a month now, adult schools have been managing uncertainty over federal policy and funding. Federal funding for adult schools typically comes through on a yearly basis, with a fiscal year beginning July 1st, and it provides as much as 30% of a school's budget. The U.S. Education Department withheld the money for a month, leading California Attorney General Rob Bonta to sue Education Secretary Linda McMahon. The department now says it will begin releasing the money, giving hope to educators, but the lawsuit is still ongoing, according to Bonta's office. Randy Tillery, Director of Economic Development at WestEd, says the new policy will perpetuate an atmosphere of fear. Many states rely entirely on the federal government to fund English language learning and high school equivalency programs for adults. Whereas California has a financial cushion, the state provides over $650 million each year specifically for adult education, representing the bulk of funding for California's adult schools. The Education Department's new policy on adults without legal status could also affect high school students. Although much of the federal funding in question supports adults taking English classes and high school equivalency courses, career technical education is part of a separate pot of money, known as Perkins Funds, and includes hundreds of high schools across the state. The Education Department memo says that funding for those programs should be restricted to students who are legal residents or citizens. An estimated 150,000 children between ages 3 and 17 live in California but lack legal status, according to the Migration Policy Institute. The vast majority are enrolled in school. U.S. Supreme Court case Plyer v. Doe requires K-12 school districts to provide all students, regardless of their legal status, with a basic public education. But in the memo, the U.S. Education Department said that career technical classes are no longer considered part of a basic education. The memo also says that children without legal status are now prohibited from taking college-level courses in high school. To implement the Education Department's new policy, public K-12 schools would need to tell certain students that they can't take specific classes because of their legal status. It would create an enormous problem for schools, says Tillery, since schools don't ask students about their legal status. Public schools would need to gather data about who is a legal resident and who isn't, he said, which could deter some students from attending school at all. The U.S. Department of Education did not respond to CalMatters questions asking how students should respond or what enforcement might look like. For V, the English language classes are about her family more than anything. Her daughter is almost 11 years old and prefers to speak English over Spanish, though she has a speech impediment and struggles to communicate in either language. V says she wants to be able to speak more English with her daughter, hoping it might help, despite the risks of going to class. We're not living our own lives, says V. We're living for our children.
This is Juliet Sanders with a public service announcement for the County of San Diego. Every animal deserves a loving home. This August, you can help make that happen. County Animal Services is waiving all pet adoption fees at the Bonita and Carlsbad Animal Shelters during the month of August for Clear the Shelters. Clear the Shelters is a nationwide initiative led by the NBC and Telemundo-owned TV stations to connect shelter animals with families ready to provide love, comfort, and care. Since 2015, the campaign has helped more than 1 million pets across the country find permanent homes. With shelters near capacity, this year's goal is to find a home for every adoptable animal. All pets adopted from county shelters come spayed or neutered, vaccinated, microchipped, and include 1-year license for dogs, free of charge, during August. From cats and dogs to guinea pigs and turtles, many animals are waiting to meet their match at County Animal Services, formerly Department of Animal Control. The website to view pets available for adoption is sddac.com, or visit the County Animal Services shelter in Bonita or Carlsbad. They are open 6 days a week, Tuesdays through Sundays, from 10 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. Staff recommend choosing a second or third pet option in case your first choice is adopted before you visit. County of Animal Services promotes the humane and responsible care of pets and works to find foster homes as well as forever homes for each healthy and adoptable animal. The department partners with more than 300 rescue organizations and provides daily care for animals in need. But if you're not ready to adopt, fostering is another way to help. It gives animals time to adjust to a home environment and prepares them for adoption by socializing them with people and other pets. You can also support local animals in need by donating to the Spirit Fund. You can also support local animals in need by donating to the Spirit Fund, which provides free and often life-saving veterinary care for injured and sick pets at county shelters. You can also help by donating items from the County Animal Services wish list on Amazon or by volunteering your time to support the animals in our care. This August, help clear the shelters and give a homeless pet the second chance they deserve.
As summer temperatures rise, the County of San Diego has closed the El Capitan Preserve near Lakeside, Hellhole Canyon Preserve in Valley Center, and Mount Gower Preserve in Ramona for the month of August. Two other county parks, Agua Caliente Regional Park and Vallecito County Park in the desert, have been closed since Memorial Day and will reopen Labor Day weekend. In addition to protecting the public from extreme temperatures, the closures give Department of Parks and Recreation staff the opportunity to conduct maintenance such as trail restoration. Park officials urge the public to be safe and protect yourselves from the heat if you hike during summer months in other parks that remain open. Prolonged exposure to heat can cause disorientation or heat stroke, so here are some safety tips. Choose hikes that are appropriate for your skills and physical condition. Go with the safest option in hot weather. Stay hydrated. Drink water before, during, and after hiking. Park rangers recommend carrying 1 quart for every 2 to 3 miles you plan to hike. Bring more water than you think you'll need, especially on longer or strenuous trails. Check weather forecasts and be familiar with the terrain for your trail. Let someone know where you will be and when you plan to return. Don't just rely on your cell phone because it can lose reception in remote areas. Hike with others, never alone. Bring a flashlight, a first aid kit, multi-purpose tool or knife, and a whistle to summon help. Non-perishable items like dried fruit, energy bars, trail mix, peanut butter, canned tuna, whole grain crackers, and jerky are healthy snacks that provide fuel to boost your energy levels and to make up for lost calories. Don't forget your hat and sunglasses, and bring sunscreen to reapply sunscreen. Dress in layers of breathable, light-colored, loose-fitting clothes that you can take on and off based on the temperature and to prevent sunburn. Good boots provide grip in rocky and slippery areas, but they also provide a thick layer of protection from the hot earth. Follow posted safety rules. Print out a map of the trail to bring along to stay on track. Avoid hiking during the heat of the day. Leave dogs at home in hot weather, since dogs can get overheated easily. Never leave your pet in the car. On an 85-degree day, a car can reach 102 degrees in 10 minutes and soar upward to 120 degrees, even with the windows down an inch or two. If you take your dog, bring plenty of water for your pet, and please don't walk your dog on hot pavement, asphalt, or sand in the heat, which can burn their paws. For more information on visiting county parks, visit sdparks.org. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell.
For the Daily Yonder and Public News Service, this is news from rural America.
Rural communities are suing the EPA over the ending of almost $3 billion in climate resilience grants. Rania Paul is the environmental director for the native village of Kipnuk, Alaska, a federally recognized tribe. She says they were using their grant to ease worsening problems with erosion.
Everyone that I've spoken to was like, what are we going to do now? I told them I was very discouraged.
Appalachian communities in southwest Virginia were using the grants for flood mitigation as climate change makes storms their worse. Emma Kelly is with Appalachian Voices.
It was a lot of effort to get this initial application in. There's not a lot of time and energy left to do that again.
The EPA is asking for the suit to be dismissed. Colorado officials sent a letter to the state's congressional delegation protesting federal public lands management cuts. That includes ending efforts to track the local impacts of the changing climate. John Clark, mayor of Ridgeway, said those programs are essential for the region's food producers.
If our farmers and ranchers don't have accurate data about what's happening with the climate, how can they be prepared for each growing season?
Critics also say a provision in the new budget law undermines local decision-making for public land use, a move Clark said he worries will lead to the loss of good-paying jobs in rapidly growing renewable energy industries.
If we discourage clean energy on public lands, that's going to severely impact our alternative energy workforce.
The law prioritizes oil and gas leasing and increases barriers for wind and solar. Colorado's clean energy workforce has exploded, adding over 3,000 jobs in 2023. To get votes for the tax and spending law, Congress added a fund to offset impacts of Medicaid cuts on small rural hospitals. Anya Slepian explains.
KFF Health News reporter Sarah Jane Tribble says experts are skeptical that the newly created Rural Health Slush Fund will be able to fill the gaps left by massive Medicaid cuts.
One estimate is that Medicaid spending will decline $155 billion over 10 years. This program's only $50 billion over 5 years. And so just the basic math doesn't work.
Nearly one in four rural Americans depend on Medicaid, but there's no guarantee rural communities will be the primary recipients of the new rural health funding. Michael Cannon with the Cato Institute says federal money doesn't always go where it's supposed to.
When Congress spends money on healthcare, it usually goes to the most powerful political constituencies.
I'm Anya Slepian.
For the Daily Yonder and Public News Service, I'm Nadia Ramlagan. For more rural stories, visit dailyyonder.com.
Welcome to East County Magazine Show's Jobs Talk, bringing you news about great jobs, job training opportunities, and growing our regional economy. For the second year in a row, a $750,000 state grant will help San Diego County recover money owed to victims of wage theft. The State Labor Commission announced the award of the grant to the county this week. The funds will help support salaries of county employees who investigate and prosecute wage theft cases for criminal or civil violations, as well as outreach efforts to educate employees about their rights under the law. The District Attorney's Office works with County Council and the County's Office of Labor Standards and Enforcement to hold employers who violate state or local labor laws accountable. Workers here in San Diego County suffer nearly $2 million in wage theft every year. The people most at risk are low-wage earners, women, people of color, non-English-speaking people, and those who are foreign-born. They may be afraid to speak up, or they don't know how to get an employer to pay them what they are owed. Board Chair Terry Lawson Reamer says you work hard to put dinner on the table for your family and then your employer refuses to pay you. It's not just hardship, it's wrong. And that's why the county is stepping in to make things right, she adds. The county's Office of Labor Standards and Enforcement was established in 2021 to educate employers and workers about employment laws and workers' rights. The office administers the Workplace Justice Fund, which has helped nearly 50 victims of wage theft right here in San Diego County. The DA's Workplace Justice Unit was also created in 2021 and was one of the first in California to investigate and prosecute criminal wage theft cases. District Attorney Summer Steffen says, I'm proud of my office's Workplace Justice Unit's work to protect employees from wage theft and labor trafficking. People depend on their wages to support their families. The DA's office investigates criminal wage theft cases, county council addresses violations of labor laws through civil enforcement actions, and the OLSC educates employers about labor laws and workers about their rights. This past year, the agency received over 600 inquiries related to wage theft and workplace violations. County Ethics, Compliance, and Labor Standards Director Brandon Butler says currently 80 cases are under active investigation with the goal of recovering unpaid wages, including minimum wage violations and stolen tips for impacted workers. So far, OLSC alone has helped collect nearly $26,000 and, in collaboration with the DA and County Council, an additional $278,000. That's over $250,000. The new state grant is part of a larger pool of money that will go to 16 prosecutors' offices statewide. California Labor Commissioner Lilia Garcia Brower says wage theft is a serious crime that devastates working families and weakens California's economy. She adds, "I'm proud to announce an additional $8.6 million in grant funding to continue advancing our critical work and holding perpetrators accountable through increased prosecutions for wage theft. Workers deserve every dollar they've rightfully earned," she says, "and law-abiding employers deserve a level playing field." The funding will cover the time period from August 1st of this year through July 31st of next year. For more information on workers' rights or wage theft, you can contact the Office of Labor Standards and Enforcement at 619-531-5129 or call the DA Workplace Justice Hotline, and that number is 1-866-402-6044. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, based on a story from County News Service, this is Miriam Raftery.
You're listening to the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for San Diego's inland region. Now, stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Juliet Sanders with the Green Scene Report. California's top leaders in wildlife response, clean energy, water resources, and natural lands recently convened to discuss the impacts of steep federal budget cuts, staff reductions, and other changes from the Trump administration that are posing severe threats to California's environment, the Los Angeles Times reports. California's drive to run its electric grid entirely on wind, solar, and other clean sources of energy has become more challenging after President Donald Trump signed a sweeping new budget law. Changes in federal tax incentives could affect the feasibility of new solar and wind projects that California is counting on to provide more electricity for its citizens, according to CalMatters. The Environmental Protection Agency, or EPA, recently eliminated its scientific research office as one of the Trump administration's latest cuts to the federal workforce, according to USA Today. The changes affect the Office of Research and Development, which provided the EPA with information to make decisions on standards for human health and the environment. The EPA will now have a new Office of Applied Science and Environmental Solutions. The office being dismantled includes biologists, chemists, epidemiologists, and toxicologists. Scientists deal with emerging pollutants, research floods, train derailments, wildfires, and more, according to Nicole Cantello, legislative and political director for the union which represents EPA workers. Cantello says, "EPA is hell-bent on destroying the foremost environmental research organization in the world," USA Today reports. She adds, "That will only result in dirty air, dirty water, and more health risks for the American people." Meanwhile, House Republicans unveiled their fiscal 2026 funding legislation for the Interior Department and the EPA, proposing steep cuts for both agencies. The Interior Department would get about $14.8 billion, and the EPA would be funded at $7 billion, which is a 23% cut for the environmental agency. Interior and Environment Chair Mike Simpson, an Idaho Republican, said in a statement that the House Appropriations Committee remains committed to ensuring taxpayer dollars are spent responsibly and efficiently, according to E&E News. But Representative Shelley Pingree, a Democrat from Maine and a ranking member of the subcommittee, warns House Republicans are once again pushing an agenda that accelerates the climate crisis, upends our national park system, and leaves local communities to fend for themselves, all while undermining the power of the Appropriations Committee and of Congress. California state officials are worried about the shifting national priorities, which include a 10% staffing cut to the U.S. Forest Service, the largest federal firefighting entity that frequently works with CAL FIRE to manage forests and combat wildfires, according to the LA Times. Patrick Wright, director of the California Wildlife and Forest Resilience Task Force, says many of the Forest Service eliminated employees were in support roles that were crucial to ensuring firefighters can do their job. Wright notes that the Trump's budget eliminates many of the Forest Service's top scientists, which would negatively affect data systems, analysis, and other crucial tools. He also voices concern about Trump's order to open up millions of acres of national forest land for timber production, including all 18 of California's national forests. Wright says this raises serious concern by Forest Service people on the ground, that if we solely focus on timber, we're going to lose our focus on protecting communities, preventing wildfire, protecting habitat, and other key measures of success. Carla Namath, director of the California Department of Water Resources, says her agency is reeling from several changes to key components of its water supply system. This includes staff reductions at the federal U.S. Bureau of Reclamation, which oversees the Central Valley Project, a vast network of dams, reservoirs, and canals that deliver water supplies across the state. Namath adds that Bureau of Reclamation lost about 1,400 staff members, over a quarter of their workforce this year, and is now facing a potential budget cut of 33%. The state also works closely with the Bureau of Reclamation to manage flood protection in California, where several levee and dam safety projects are now in jeopardy, Namath adds, according to the LA Times. Armando Quintero, director of California State Parks, said the National Park Service is facing a potential billion-dollar budget cut, and they've already lost 24% of staff since January. More than 100 superintendent positions are currently vacant, which has resulted in canceled tours, closed campgrounds, reduced hours, and other effects in California's 9 national parks. According to Quintero, all 18 of California's national forests are losing staff, and its regional office is likely to be eliminated. Jen Eckerle, Deputy Secretary for Oceans and Coastal Policy at the California Natural Resources Agency, says the state is facing the loss of funding for coastal protection, including nearly $870 million previously awarded in a grant from the Federal Emergency Management Agency, or FEMA. Obviously, these actions are going to hamper California's ability to predict, respond, and adapt to climate impacts like sea level rise, ocean acidification, marine heat waves, and will lead to impacts for our coastal economies and ecosystems, Eckerle warns. Robert Chung, chief of staff to the chair of the California Energy Commission, says the Trump administration has made moves to end long-standing tax credits for clean energy. However, they will only apply to projects placed into service by December of 2027, or that start construction by July 2026. The administration is also canceling $3.7 billion in awards managed by the Department of Energy's Office of Clean Energy Demonstrations, and at least $800 million was supposed to go to California. Chun states that the office staff has been reduced from about 250 people to just 35 people. According to Chung, the Trump administration has removed basic energy efficiency regulations that have existed for decades, and making it harder for California to reduce pollution by revoking waivers it has granted under the Clean Air Act to enforce tailpipe emission standards. All of this will likely result in worse air quality, higher energy costs, reduced grid reliability, and limited growth for new industries such as artificial intelligence, he warns. But Chun predicts they can slow the transition to clean energy here and there, but they can't stop it. We shouldn't back down from our vision of a clean future or lower expectations for what we can achieve here in California. Trump has rolled back incentives for wind and solar projects championed by former President Joe Biden, shortening the timeline for the industry to obtain tax credits, which now expire at the end of 2027, CalMatters reports. Developers of wind and solar projects now face a shorter deadline for obtaining tax credits. In addition, the new federal rules bar companies from accessing tax credits if they rely on major components from China or other foreign entities of concern. Experts say this restriction could hit California's solar and wind industry especially hard. These changes to tax credits are estimated to save federal government around $499 billion between 2025 and 2034. Projects can still be built without tax credits, but it puts a financial burden on their investors. In California, 11 solar projects and one onshore wind project face potential delays or cancellation, according to Atlas Public Policy's analysis of federal data. These new hurdles for solar and wind come as they are being scaled up to meet surging electricity demand nationwide, including energy-hungry data centers fueling the rise of artificial intelligence. Sean Gallagher, Senior Vice President of Policy for the Solar Energy Industries Association, says that the industry is still assessing what the federal tax bill means for them. He warned that these changes could jeopardize up to 35,700 solar jobs and 25 solar manufacturing facilities in California, The California Energy Commission told CalMatters that tax credit savings are typically passed on to ratepayers through lower contracting costs. In the long term, the repeal of the tax credits will result in higher future electricity rates for customers. Governor Gavin Newsom says California's grid runs on a mix of renewables such as solar, wind, geothermal, nuclear, biomass, and hydropower, citing new data compiled by the California Energy Commission. Newsom says the fourth largest economy in the world is running on more clean energy than ever before. Trump and Republicans can try all they want to take us back to the days of dirty coal, but the future is cheap, abundant, clean energy, the governor adds defiantly. For wind and solar, there is still a possible path to claim tax credits if construction starts within a year or if they come online by the end of 2027. In theory, those projects could be connected to the grid by 2031 and still qualify, but that depends on how the Treasury Department defines what it means to start construction, according to Kevin Book, an energy analyst in Washington, D.C. In addition to those wind and solar credits, the budget signed by Trump also ends tax credit for purchase of electric cars, rooftop solar panels, home batteries, heat pumps, insulation, energy-efficient windows, and more. Those changes are estimated to save about $543 billion between 2025 and 2024. However, in a letter to Governor Newsom and other state legislative leaders on July 16th, five trade groups representing solar, wind, and energy storage companies called on the state to speed up environmental reviews and project approvals, initiate new clean energy procurement, and allow more facilities to be sited on agricultural lands, Reuters reports. Taken together, the new federal landscape creates a serious risk of delay or cancellation for dozens of utility-scale solar and wind projects across the state, threatening jobs, reliability, and progress toward California's clean energy targets, the letter from wind and solar industry organizations warns. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Juliet Sanders.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from San Diego's East County.
Welcome to East County Magazine's Destination East County, bringing you all of the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County each week. This is Miriam Raftery with this week's Destination East County. Hot August nights and late summer days bring some of East County's most iconic events. This month's hot happenings include the Ramona Country Fair, San Diego Dark Sky Fest in Julian, a Gatsby-themed Mount Helix Food and Wine Festival celebrating the park's centennial, a county music pool party at Saquon, Santee's Summer Concerts, La Mesa's Classic Car Show, Macy Gray in concert at the Magnolia, Grammy Award-winning Alabama Shakes at San Diego State, Julian Mountain Brew Fest, Open Farm Days at the Oasis Camel Dairy, Hakumbia Fest in Hakumba Hot Springs, and more. And here are details. Amusement rides, carnival games, live music, and more are all part of the Ramona Country Fair. The fun takes place August 1st through 3rd at the Ramona Outdoor Community Center in Ramona. The festivities also include a cornhole competition, kids' power wheel race, off-road show, craft beers and local wines, dog events, craft and commercial vendors, and more. The live music lineup includes many well-known local bands and talented singers. This event is open to the community, though there is a fee for parking. For hours and a full lineup of live entertainment, you can visit RamonaChamber.com. Santee's Summer Concert Series concludes with 80s All-Stars on August 7th playing hits from the 80s and Jimmy's Buffet, a Jimmy Buffett tribute band, on August 14th. Concerts run from 6:30 to 8 p.m. at Town Center Community Park East in Santee. August is the last month for the La Mesa Classic Car Show this year, held each Thursday from 5 to 8 p.m. along La Mesa Boulevard in the heart of La Mesa's downtown village. The last four musical performers are June and John's Rockin' Country Caravan on August 7th, Zealand on August 14th, That Beatles Cover Band August 21st, and the 80s All-Stars for the season finale on August 28th. Find more info at lamesavillageassociation.org. Oasis Camel Dairy in Ramona will host Open Farm Days on August 9th and 23rd, where you can watch a live show with camels and talking birds, watch a turkey stampede, feed, and meet the animals. Advanced tickets are required and may be purchased online at cameldairy.com. Four-time Grammy Award-winning rock band Alabama Shakes will be live in concert at the Cal Coast Open Air Amphitheater at San Diego State University on August 10th. Their hit songs include Hold On, Don't Wanna Fight, and Killer Diller Blue. For tickets, you can visit the Associated Students site at San Diego State University. In Cash After Dark on August 13th, tribute artist Cliff Wright brings music of Johnny Cash to Saquon's Up Close and Personal Theater. Wright regularly performs in Vegas as well as on tour. For tickets, you can visit saquon.com/events. On August 14th, Muscatine Bloodline brings a country music pool party complete with line dancing to the river at Saquon. The Alabama duo earned a standing ovation at the Grand Ole Opry, and they've sold out shows nationwide with music inspired by the Cajun fishing villages where they grew up. For tickets and details, visit saquon.com/events. Grammy Award-winning soul and R&B singer and actress Macy Gray will perform at the Magnolia in El Cajon on August 15th at 7 p.m. Known for her distinctive raspy voice and singing style influenced by Billie Holiday, she has sold over 25 million records worldwide, released 10 albums, and was inducted into the National Rhythm and Blues Hall of Fame in 2014. She's best known for her international hit single, I Try. Gray has also appeared in many movies, including Training Day, Spider-Man, Scary Movie 3, Lackawanna Blues, and The Paperboy. For tickets to her concert at the Magnolia, you can visit magnoliasandiego.com. Celebrate the night sky at the San Diego Dark Sky Network on Saturday, August 25th from 3 p.m. to 11 p.m. at Mangini Winery in Julian, an international dark sky community. August 16th will be a dark, moonless night and a good opportunity to view the Perseid meteor shower. Local astronomers will set up telescopes to view other night sky features, including the Milky Way galaxy. You can also enjoy a tour of the night sky with laser pointers and hands-on activities for kids. Plus, hear from Dr. Robert Quimby, director of the Mount Laguna Observatory and astronomy professor at San Diego State University, about their astronomical research. For more information, visit juliandarkskynetwork.com. You're invited to don your best Roaring Twenties attire and party the night away atop Mount Helix on August 16th at the Mount Helix Food and Wine Festival, which this year has a Great Gatsby theme. The event celebrates the 100th anniversary of the Mount Helix Nature Park. Guests will enjoy two live bands, dancing under the stars, a speakeasy, food and beverage sampling booths, live and silent auctions, and more, all to benefit the Mount Helix Park Foundation. For tickets, visit mounthelixpark.org/festival, and that's Mount Helix, MTHELIXpark.org/festival. The Julian Chamber of Commerce invites you to savor the Julian Mountain Brew Fest at Nickel Beer Company on August 23rd from noon to 4 p.m. Your ticket includes 8 tastings, a commemorative cup, and live music by the Sun Valley String Band. Bad Vibes, Good Friends, and Hakumba Hot Springs Hotel will present Hakumbia Fest on August 30th, starting at 5 p.m. This is a one-night celebration of Afro-Colombian rhythms, traditional and psychedelic cumbia from Colombia, Mexico, and USA. This powerful night of music and dance features the legendary Los Gaiteros de San Jacinto, torchbearers of Colombia's ancestral gaita and cumbia traditions. Sharing the stage will be Bogota's experimental groove magicians, Rumparayo, known for their wild percussion-driven reinventions of tropical classics, and Tijuana's own La Diabla, fusing border town swagger with sultry sonidero energy, plus DJ Strange Bouquets and DJ Matt Bazone of Space Hall Sound Machine. Set in the landscape of Hakumba Hot Springs, this desert gathering promises a sonic pilgrimage that spans generations and continents. You're invited to come early for a soak and stay late for the music. For tickets and details, you can visit hakumba.com. And you can find details on all of these events and more on our calendar of events at eastcountymagazine.org. That's all for this week. We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
Our East County Magazine radio show needs volunteers, and so does our award-winning news website at eastcountymagazine.org. If you would like to help write scripts, learn reporting skills, research topics for our news team, or have an on-air voice to be the media, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617.
Welcome to 2025 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Our system that was gifted to us by the framers of the Constitution should be one where the people of Texas are able to decide which elected officials have the ability and honor to to represent them in Washington.
U.S. House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries says he stands with Texas Democratic legislators who are leaving the state to block a vote on new redistricting maps. At the request of President Donald Trump, Texas state Republicans have proposed new maps that could cost Democrats up to 5 congressional seats. They would break up 3 urban districts and aim to make some in the Rio Grande Valley more Republican. The lawmaker's absence from the statehouse aims to prevent a necessary quorum to hold a vote this week. The Democratic lawmakers going to Chicago and New York are holding rallies with Governors J.B. Pritzker and Kathy Hochul, but Republican lawmakers back home may issue civil arrest warrants for violating statehouse rules. The Speaker of the Texas House says all options will be on the table if not enough members are present for a vote. As unusual as mid-decade redistricting is, half a dozen states, red and blue, may follow suit. Meanwhile, Trump says Friday's weak jobs report was designed to make him look bad, and he's fired the head of the Bureau of Labor Statistics. Economists and some in the business community warn shooting the messenger and pressuring nonpartisan federal statisticians is a terrible idea, but Stephen Miron, chair of the Council of Economic Advisors, insists Trump's policies aren't failing.
Obviously, there were elements of it that we didn't love, but the trade deals are now in place that cover, including the U.S., almost 60% of the global economy. Huge deal for America, like huge investments coming in, commitments to purchase everything from energy to defense products.
Trump moved U.S. nuclear submarines in response to statements from a former Russian president about the risk of war increasing. Security officials call the move symbolic given the U.S. already has nuclear-armed and powered submarines in the area. According to a new report, ICE's mass arrests of migrants are a solution without a problem. The Immigration Research Initiative says their data shows most people being detained don't have a criminal conviction, although they may have committed a civil violation by breaking immigration law. Report co-author Chloe East says ICE's aggressive tactics resemble political rhetoric more than an actual solution.
We see ICE responding to the higher quota of the number of daily arrests. And we also see ICE targeting the democratically controlled cities Trump and his border czar were explicit that they wanted to target.
The Senate is heading home after a rare weekend session to speed up progress on Trump appointees. The president has been urging the chamber to cancel its August recess in favor of speeding through nominations, which have ground to a halt due in part to Democratic resistance. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer says he and others in the chamber wanted progress but found it impossible.
Donald Trump tried to bully us, go around us, threaten us, call us names, but he got nothing. And he walked away with his tail between his legs. One of these days, Trump is going to have to learn that he needs to work with Democrats to help the American people.
I'm Edwin J. Vieira for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
This is John Tidwell with a business report from East County Magazine. The city of Santee is taking the high road, approving 4 business permits for sale of cannabis after what Mayor John Minto described as an exhaustive vetting process. Out of the 16 applicants, the 4 selected all have experience retailing in highly regulated industries such as liquor and gasoline. The stores will offer both medical and recreational cannabis or marijuana products. The 4 permits were awarded to Buzz, Dr. Green Thumbs, Green Reserve, and Flight, with Embark selected as the alternate vendor if one of the top 4 drops out or fails to complete the remaining steps for a required state license. Minto told a packed city council chamber that every applicant made some great points, but ultimately the council could only choose 4. I wish we could choose everybody, but we can't, he said, referring to the city's new ordinance, which allows only 4 cannabis vendors. Vice Mayor Rob McNellis, who helped develop the approval process for the cannabis permitting, said of the vote, "This is literally the most difficult thing I've ever done sitting up here." The vetting of the proposals revealed that sale of recreational and medicinal cannabis is lucrative and growing, despite the escalating costs for product, increased taxes, and competition from the cheaper black market. Each of the groups projected first-year annual sales ranging from a few million dollars to one that said it expected more than $20 million. Flight, in its application, said it expects over 1,000 transactions daily, with an average sale of $77. Property owners Chris and Martin Salem also own the 76 gas station, Circle K, and sandwich shop across the street from the site on Prospect Avenue, just off Cuyamaca. Flight's owners say they've pulled together around $2.4 million for permits, site improvements, and inventory purchase for the first 3 months, but expect to earn $20 million or more in the first year. They also own 8 gas stations elsewhere, as well as convenience stores, a Mexican restaurant, and a barber shop. Santee stands to reap millions in new taxes as well as get contributions to local nonprofit groups through a request from the competing applicants to make a community benefit fee as part of their applications. This ranged from a baseline 5% up to 10% of gross sales, in addition to the city's sales tax of 7.75% and a state excise tax of 19% that each business must pay. That's a lot of money for the city. Green Reserve, which gained a permit to open a shop on Prospect Avenue, says it expects to contribute $800,000 for the city's community benefit fee and $200,000 for the funds targeting local charities. Santee becomes the 10th city in San Diego County to approve the sale of cannabis after first adopting an ordinance to do so in 2022. When it approved its ordinance, Santee officials said they were taking a proactive approach to the issue of selling legalized drugs within city limits. If the city continued to prohibit the sale of cannabis, it would likely be sued and lose any power to enact its standards and control over the companies selling the products that are legal in the state. As part of the vetting process, groups had to divulge details about their existing cannabis operations, their financial health, and how they would operate the business in Santee. Some also provided local connections that might curry favor with the council. Eben Johnson, CEO of Dr. Green Thumbs, noted his mother, Lizbeth Johnson, was a former superintendent of the Santee School District. Flight and the Salem brothers touted an endorsement from David Bejarano, the former police chief of San Diego and Chula Vista, as well as the former U.S. Marshal of Southern California. Green Reserve said Bill Berghoff, the owner of Santee's highly successful Sportsplex USA, was hired to be the business community outreach liaison. The four entities approved for the cannabis permits must still negotiate and have their individual cannabis business agreements approved by the council, then obtain all the necessary building or other permits associated with improving their sites. Finally, they have to obtain a cannabis permit from the California Department of Cannabis Control. All this could take an estimated 6 to 12 months, according to Sandy Sawa, Santee's planning director. All the selected groups for Santee's permits asserted that businesses would not only comply with the existing state and local rules, but do extensive public outreach to ensure the stores would be safe to visit and not cause any problems. The shops cannot be located within 900 feet of schools, churches, or other sensitive uses. All of the sites proposed by the applicants were in the city's industrial or commercial zones. Three of the four approved were in District 2. That district's representative, Ron Hall, voted against the cannabis ordinance in 2022, along with Mayor Minto. Russ Havens, publisher of SanDiegoCannabisTimes.com, a website that tracks the local industry, said he watched a good deal of the interviews and voting on the Santee permits via satellite TV and was surprised about how much financial detail the groups divulged since they are private companies. As far as problems such as theft, burglary, and loitering, that hasn't been apparent at existing local stores, he said. There's been some break-ins and grabbing products at some stores, but that has occurred more in L.A., not here, Havens said. With a plethora of cannabis shops operating in La Mesa and San Diego, and a total of some 70 dispensaries operating in the county, the question is whether there is enough demand in Santee for these new shops to be viable. But Havens believes there is, since a lot of Santee users will be happy not to make the trek over Highway 52 or Interstate 8 to buy cannabis.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Royalty Free Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show.